Good evening and welcome to This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the Beyond the Pitch Media Network. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight I am joined by my trusty co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas, and the great Peter Coates from Golazo Argentino, the Golazo Argentino podcast, and previously featured on the Hand of Pod podcast, to talk about the biggest matchup and the biggest rivalry in all of sports throughout the world. It is not Michigan-Ohio State. It is not Yankees-Red Sox. It is not cats and dogs. It is Boca River, the Copa Libertadores final, which is coming up over two legs, the last two-legged final that we're going to see in the Libertadores, and it starts this Saturday. So we're looking at two teams, gentlemen, that have a very, very, very bitter rivalry. Even recently in the past few days, we've heard of fans burning down other fans' houses. We've actually, I believe, had one report of a person being killed. I mean, this rivalry is deep. It goes all the way back to 1913, where River won the first matchup between the two of them, the first official Superclásico, a 3-1 victory for River on August 24th, 1913. We're talking over 105 years of rivalry, 246 matches, 88 Boca wins, 81 River wins, 322 goals for Boca, 298 goals for River, multiple players that have played for both teams. Very, very recent fan violence, historical fan violence, one of the world's biggest soccer tragedies at one point as well. There's been so much angst and so much anger in this matchup. It is truly the biggest rivalry and the most bitter rivalry in all of sports around the world. And Peter, I want to go to you because you are definitely familiar with this. These two teams are separated by 16 kilometers, if you think about it, in Buenos Aires, Argentina. And they're going to be the site of the most coveted trophy in club soccer in South America. I want to take a look at this from two different perspectives. First, from the River fans, what does this kind of title mean? What does this rivalry mean to those players? And especially River having a history, if I remember correctly, River being relegated once in Argentinian football, but Boca has never been relegated. And they kind of use that as a sticking point to the River fans. What does this mean to the River fans, this particular tournament and this rivalry?
Well, everything, and that's what makes this particular final so enormous. The rivalry, just in and of itself, is colossal. I mean, the whole country grinds to a halt, and that's even just for a friendly game. Factor in that the Copa Libertadores means everything to the South American teams, not just River and Boca, but when you add that in on top of this rivalry, that's what makes this game so big, and why rightly the whole world is suddenly focused on the Copa Libertadores, in which ordinarily they wouldn't be. As you mentioned there, like the River's relegation in 2011 is something which Boca fans hold very dear. They're being like the only team not to have gone down, and that's the nature of the rivalry. It's we've won more league titles, okay, but we've won more Copa Libertadores. And that obviously comes into play here with Boca going for Independiente's record of 7 Copa Libertadores. And River, you know, with that sticking point of knowing that Boca could become the record holders with a victory over these two legs. River obviously going for their 4th. So there's just so many facets, but as ever, what's at the center of this is just that rivalry between these two huge clubs.
Now, I also want to go to the Boca side of it, because Boca's history, or most recent history, especially against River in this particular matchup, in this particular scenario, is very, very bitter. I referred back to May 7th of 2015, where in the round of 16, River was leading, if I remember, in the two-legged competition between River and Boca. I believe they were up 1-0 going into the second leg at La Bombonera. And in the second half, or the start of the second half, River players were sprayed with pepper spray by the Boca fans, led to Boca being disqualified from the tournament because the match was abandoned. Led them being disqualified from the tournament, and then River actually went on from that point, which really, you know, Boca was dominant. That was a year where we thought for sure Boca Juniors was going to be the Libertadores champion. They get eliminated because of this, and River actually goes on to win the tournament. What does this particular final hold for Boca fans, not only as a Super Clásico, but an opportunity to kind of right a wrong and win a trophy that they really felt they should have won in 2015?
Yeah, I mean, likewise, the other side of the coin is more or less identical as what I said in terms of how important it is to River. It's the same for Boca, regardless of what went on. In 2015, as you said, when they were kicked out, and rightly so, I mean, absolutely dreadful scenes when the River players were attacked coming through the tunnel. But there was still a feeling from a lot of Boca fans that, you know, they shouldn't have been kicked out. And this was, you know, River using contacts in CONMEBOL to kind of go through by way of the desk, which would be the sort of phrase that would be used here. So there is that that just adds a little bit of extra needle here as the two sides go back to La Bombonera. And as I said before, like, obviously Boca are going for a record. So given that disappointment, obviously I think the following year they went out in the semifinals again when they were probably favourites to win it, and they lost to Independiente del Valle. That was a big shock. Then they didn't play international football for a year, which, you know, was awful for a club as big as Boca. So them getting back to this point, even though they've won back-to-back league titles, it's always kind of been, yeah, okay, we won the league titles, but, you know, we weren't there or thereabouts in the Libertadores. And now this is the chance, really, for them to do that and to say, okay, now we are the dominant team in South America again. And I think with that in mind as well, there is a degree of pressure on Balasquilotto, because I think even though you look at his record and you see those two league titles, there has always been a feeling of it's kind of the minimum that he could have done with such a good squad and with other teams distracted by competition in some cases where Boca weren't. And it's always been, you know, you need to bring us to Libertadores. So that's that would have been a huge pressure anyway. Factor in the fact that it come up, it's now against River, and, you know, again, it just piles on it, top of everything else.
So now I want to turn this over to you, Rob, because I'd like your quick perspective on this. But, you know, you look at the list of players. First, let's look at the two managers who have not only played for their respective clubs and have won Copa Libertadores for their respective clubs, but now they're facing each other in the managerial perspective, which we'll get into managers itself a little later on. But there's a great list of players here that have played for both sides of this rivalry. First and foremost, one of the more famous ones and somebody that is a big fan favorite is Batigol himself, Gabriel Batistuta. Claudio Caniggia also played for both teams. Lucas Prato, somebody a little more recent that has played for both River and Boca, and somebody that many people got to know and love really over the last World Cup is Ricardo Gareca, who the coach of Peru, who also played for both teams. What does this mean for even some of the players that may have a fan tie or a heart tie to this this rivalry? What does it mean for them moving forward?
Well, I mean, I think it's all the vision, but you have to also realize something, and I'm sure Peter could, you know, help me out on this one, is that these players, you know, that typically do play for both clubs tend to be much more an idol at one club rather than, you know, being idols at both. And that's the sense. The big example, I think, Batistuta is more of an idol in Boca than he is at River. Caniggia, same thing as well. Gareca at River, you know, and I can even include a few other names here that perhaps we haven't mentioned. Oscar Ruggeri, the former captain of Argentina, he's a big River person. So yeah, I mean, it's all the sense of I guess the whole division, and that really just it's the thing too. And I think here in Argentina, you know, that's the main talking point. It's always going to be that. It's always going to be, you know, if you're Boca or River. I mean, yes, you have other clubs. You have your Racing, you have your Independiente, San Lorenzo, you have your Newell's and what's it called, Rosario Central. You have those clubs. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that Boca and River, the two teams that, you know, dominate not just Argentine football as a whole, but South American football, even world football in the sense of a rivalry perspective, that just shows how important it is. I think for those type of players, look, I mean, I think they mainly have more of an alliance with the specific team rather than both, because that's the sense here. You have those players that, you know, have played at that club and will become fans of that club because of the impact that they made. You know, we'll obviously talk about the managers later on, but, you know, two of them are hugely identified with both the club, not just as a manager, but also when they were players, highly successful as a player back in the in the 90s and the 2000s. But before we get onto that, we'll obviously go into the main talking point now is the players to watch. And Peter, obviously, we'll go here to first and we'll talk about River, because certainly for on a River perspective, it has been quite an interesting season to say, because, you know, you look at the top players here, and I think for myself, you know, I've been a huge fan of watching him play, is Juan Fernando Quintero, you know, the Colombian midfielder, you know, who did well in the World Cup and won a few fans, but he's certainly becoming one of the key players at this River Plate side. You know, you look at other players like Santos Borré, Lucas Prato, Pity Martinez, who has obviously been rumored to come here to the United States as a replacement for Miguel Miron at Atlanta United. You look at Armani, Franco Armani, who I think is the best South American goalkeeper, or is the best goalkeeper in South America at the moment. You know, you look at Lucas Prato. I mean, you know, from a River Plate perspective, how confident would you be on this team heading into this big final? You know, who do you think is the most important player that maybe for those that aren't familiar with the players that I mentioned or anyone else? I mean, who do you think are the players to watch out for heading into this big final?
Yeah, I think you mentioned most of those weapons there for River. I think even though he may not even start the game in La Bombonera, but Juanfer Quintero is obviously such a special, unique talent. You know, maybe he won't start, as I said, but I think he's that person that, even if he does just get 30 minutes, can unlock a defence in that time with some of his passing. So I think he'll be someone to look out for over the two legs. I think Ezequiel Palacios has obviously broken into the Argentina setup now, but has been tremendous for River during this run, and is rightly now being linked to the likes of Real Madrid and Barcelona. And, you know, I think he will definitely start and play an important role in both legs, and it's certainly someone for people who aren't that familiar with watching South American football week in, week out to keep an eye on. I mean, River, I think, also have a couple of issues maybe going into the first leg, at least, with Leonardo Poncio not fit. You know, even though he's getting on a bit, he's been a very important member of the River team, and is one of those constants that goes back to when they last won the Libertadores, and has been a, you know, an on-field leader for Gachado. And so him missing out does cause some problems. They're talking about Bruno Succolini playing on Saturday, which, you know, I think most River fans would see as a definite downgrade. And maybe Nacho Scocco as well is a doubt after having a slight calf injury at the weekend. So there's the two doubts for River. But as you mentioned, those players previously with the likes of Santos Borré and Prato probably leading the line, Pity Martinez and possibly Quintero, they do have the weapons in Boca's half to cause problems. And then... yeah, they've also proved to have a good defence in this tournament. They went in the knockout stages. They had the away leg first when they played Racing in the last 16 and Independiente in the quarterfinals. And both times they went to Avellaneda and got goalless draws, which enabled them to come back to the Monumental and pick up the win needed to progress. Obviously, the Gremio tie, they were at home in the first leg and lost, so they had to be a bit more... attacking in the second leg, but it was another excellent performance. So I think with River, rather than perhaps looking at an individual player as much as anything, you look at just the fact that Marcelo Gallardo has this incredible knack of getting the best out of his teams, especially in these knockout tournaments. They know how to win. They know how to grind out results. And I think they'll be looking to do that again in La Bombonera, even if it's not pretty.
Definitely. Now, going on to the Boca perspective, they're in a much more different state, because you have to also look at the way they came into this tournament or into the situation. You know, finished second place in their group, in a really tough group, with Palmeiras, Junior, Alianza Lima. You know, they did battle it out between, you know, three heavyweights, I would say, on a South American perspective, Libertad in the round of 16, Cruzeiro in the quarterfinals, and Palmeiras just now in the semifinals. You know, so, but they are set up quite well, I guess, given the likes of the talents that they have. You know, you look at the key players to watch, I think. You look at Christian Pavon, you know, the great Argentine young winger that the team has. You look at Cardona, the great midfield that they have. Other players who I think have been important as well. Benedetto, I think for me, has been the sensation, you know, given the fact that he's been injured so far recently and comes back and scores important goals in the semifinals against Palmeiras. And then you have the wild card in that sense, and I guess the players, the people's player in this sense, and that's Carlos Tevez, you know, 34 years old, coming back to Boca for quite some time, and to recently, I think, to achieve this dream, to win the Libertadores. I mean, it would be his second, his first in 14 years, I think in 15 years, 2003, he won it as a young, rising superstar in the making. And now he comes back, and it's all homecoming in this sense for a player like Carlos Tevez. You know, how important is Tevez to this team? And, you know, of all the other players that I've mentioned, what kind of advantage do you think that this Boca team has going against River, who, you know, are known to grind out results? You know, what are the things to look out for? What are the players to look out for this Boca team heading into the finals?
Well, I think looking, just to go firstly with a look at Tevez, I think his role is now more for experience rather than anything else. I don't think he's going to start. And you know, it's difficult to actually look for, when everyone's fit, a place for Carlos Tevez in the starting 11. That's not to say that he doesn't still have a role there, given some of the inexperience elsewhere in the team, but I certainly don't see him starting on Saturday. As you pointed out, I think Christian Pavon is going to be the guy that most people are looking for, but I think also it looks as though they're going to go with Sebastian Villa as well, the very quick Colombian winger that came in the last window. So I think with those two either side of a number nine, they're obviously going to look to break quickly, try and get in and use that pace, trying to get in behind the likes of Pinola and Maidana into those channels inside the fullbacks. And that looks like the most dangerous part that River will have to prepare for. You mentioned, obviously, Dario Benedetto, who was the hero of the semi-final, two sensational goals that gave him the 2-0 first leg lead over Palmeiras, another one in the away leg. But with only one spot up for grabs, it remains to be seen whether he goes from the start on Saturday or whether Ramon Nabila starts. And obviously, they're two very different types of number nines. Both scored plenty of goals over the last couple of months. Both have both been very useful to Boca. You know, so this is a sign of how stacked Boca's squad is when one or the other, and the likes of Carlos Tevez or Fernando Gago can sit on the bench. And I think another key guy to look out for is Wilmer Barrios. You know, the Colombian defensive midfield player is arguably the best in that position in South America, and will be absolutely vital in breaking up play and starting the attacks from deep for Boca. So there's question marks, I think, over Boca's defence. Obviously, they're probably not going to go with Agustin Rossi in goal, who the club obviously didn't really fancy, given that they signed Andrade. He obviously broke his jaw in the quarterfinals. They even then signed Carlos Lampe as an emergency signing recently, but it looks as though Rossi's still going to be number one. So there are those question marks there at the back, but certainly in that midfield with Barrios, Nandez, Pablo Perez, and more to come on the bench, and that attacking sort of three or four that we mentioned, plus someone like Mauro Sarati could come off the bench. You know, there's a lot of talent there attacking-wise. So when you look at the two teams, there are a lot of talent in both final thirds. It just depends how much or who's going to go for it the most, I think, in this first leg, which could be a bit of a cagey one.
Definitely. Now, Joe, obviously going back to a player like Carlos Tevez, you know, obviously a huge player, at least one of the more important players of coming from Argentina of this generation. You look at the achievements that he's made over his career. You know, he, obviously winning a Copa Libertadores as a young at Boca. In 2003, you know, winning in Corinthians, winning at Manchester United, the Premier League, the Champions League, also winning it at Manchester City, the Premier League, Juventus winning a Serie A twice. What would this Copa Libertadores mean for a player like Carlos Tevez? And, you know, where would that put him as one of the top players of his generation, given all the given all the plaudits that he's won in his career.
Well, you know, I think it would be the final jewel in his personal crown for sure. I mean, he's won pretty much everything. He won the double at Juventus. He, like you said, he's won the title at City. He's won the title at United. He's won the Champions League at United. He's pretty much gone everywhere and won. He's won the Copa Lib with Boca Juniors, like you had said. He came up through the youth leagues with Boca Juniors as well prior to his youth career before heading out to the senior team in 2001. It would be big for him. And as far as placing him on the upper echelon or somewhere in that world of Argentinian players, I think you've got to talk about him. I don't know. There's some magical players that have come through. I mean, everyone talks about Messi, Maradona. We talked about Batigol just 2 minutes ago. There are so many great players that have come from Argentina. I think he belongs in the discussion. And it's hard to argue with all the hardware that he's brought back over his career. And I think winning a Libertadores here at the end of his career, I think would be a huge statement for him as putting himself in one of those best Argentinian players of all time. It also lends him to become one of the best domestic players of all time, having won Libertadores titles and back end and bookends of his entire career, which is a body that holds many, many great trophies in Europe. I think it would put him in that upper echelon of players that have come through Argentina all time.
Definitely. Peter, what do you think of? Because this is obviously a player that has to go down as one of the best Argentine players of his generation. You know, perhaps not on the likes of a Messi, but, you know, perhaps on the likes of an Aguero, an Higuain, a Di Maria, those kind of Mascherano, Zanetti, those kind of players. What would this Copa Libertadores title mean for not just for the people who are a big fan of Carlos Tevez, but for Carlos Tevez himself?
Yeah, I think it would mean everything to him. I think that was the goal, to come back. I think it was a huge disappointment when he came back the second time to the huge, when they filled out the La Bombonera for his unveiling. And that was the purpose, really, was come back and win the Libertadores. So when they lost, as I mentioned in that semi-final earlier, and then, when they hadn't qualified for the next year, I think it kind of helped Tevez make the decision to go to China. So the opportunity then to come back and go for it one more time just gives him that possibility to end his career, I think, on such a high. And I think that was his plan in the first place. And now he's got such a great opportunity. As I say, I don't think he'll play a central role necessarily to Boca's starting 11, but still, he's still an integral member of that squad. And if they were to win it, it would certainly be another a massive achievement in his glittering career.
Definitely. Now let's go to the tactical approach of this game, because certainly these are two pragmatic managers that we have to talk about here in Marcelo Gallardo of River Plate and Guillermo Barros-Skelotto of Boca Juniors. You know, kind of a two-part question for you, Peter, but, going into River, because, you look at a team that have really played quite well in this tournament, playing free-flowing football, very forward in the sense, maybe not in comparison to what Boca tries to do throughout the whole campaign, but how do you see these two edging out against each other tactically, and who do you think has the better edge between the two teams?
Well, I think tactically I would be inclined to say that Marcelo Gallardo is the more astute tactician. Obviously, him not being at the stadium on Saturday because of the punishment following on from the semi-finals is a blow to River. So they'll be doing a lot of preparation this week, trying to get his message across. And then in the return leg, he's going to be reduced again to the stand. But I think Gallardo's shown during his tenure that I think he can change, he can adapt during the game, he can adapt to different opponents, and can be pragmatic in terms of, he can kind of shut River up to some extent and say, okay, we'll sit back. We're content with what we're doing. I think on the flip side, Barros-Skelotto hasn't quite shown all that much in that degree. I feel far more with Boca is Barros-Skelotto has his way of playing. He has an incredible squad to be able to do that. And then he puts them out and that's Boca. I don't know if things aren't working, whether he's going to be the man who will notice that quick enough and say, okay, I need to change this. Because I think in general, what you see with Boca is the changes are just sort of like for like. They have such a strong squad that there are two or three players in every position. He's therefore able just to keep the same tactics and say, okay, Avila's not working now, for example. Okay, let's bring Benedetto on as a number nine. The team stays the same, and Benedetto scores the goals to take them through. But there was no real ingenuity in what he did. So in terms of the tactical upper hand, I would give that to River. But obviously, with Marcelo Gallardo not being able to be on the touchline, maybe that plays gives an advantage to Boca.
Now, I just want to jump in here because I do want to go into the coaches a little deeper, because both of these coaches come into this final match with quite the distraction on both sides. And I want to let's dive into Gallardo a little bit deeper. Obviously, four-match suspension. Peter, I just want to clarify to make sure he is not allowed on the touchline, but will he be allowed back on the back into the stadium like he was at Gremio? Because that's kind of where the trouble began. He was in constant contact with his assistant coaches on the touchline. And they made no disguise of it. You could see them talking to each other. And then at halftime, which is really what got him in trouble, he actually went down into the locker room and addressed the team, really to an inspirational level, where they came out and scored two goals in the second half to move on. Is Gallardo allowed in the stadium during both matches?
My understanding is that for the game in La Bombonera, he's not allowed in the stadium. Mm-hmm. And for the second leg and then two additional matches, wherever they may be, he's not allowed on the touchline. So like similar to how he should have been for the game against Gremio. Mm-hmm. So unless Roberto has any different information.
No. You should tell me.
Yeah. That's my understanding. So
gotcha.
The first leg, he's not going to be even there. And for the second leg, he's going to be like he should have been in the semifinal.
Now, you could see, you know, obviously with modern technology, he could be watching this on a television screen somewhere in Buenos Aires. And granted, he'll have probably a few seconds of delay. But I think you'll still be in constant contact with his sideline, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see exactly what plays out. And obviously Argentine football loves a good conspiracy anyway, so I think if any of the River team are spotted on any kind of device, then certainly it'll fire up that conspiracy engine to say, ah, Gallardo's sending messages from somewhere else in the city. But that's just the way it is, I think. That could happen, who knows. I'm not entirely sure anyway with the second leg. What's the ruling on the use of the walkie-talkie from the stands? Because I did see someone on Twitter correct me and say that is actually allowed. He's just not allowed in the dressing room. But certainly, anyway, for Saturday, he shouldn't be having any kind of contact.
I'm sure he'll find a way around that, whether it be carrier pigeon or the scoreboard. I'm sure there'll be something.
WhatsApp. It's good old WhatsApp.
Yeah, we'll use WhatsApp. That's for sure. Let's go to the other side, the other touchline, and the other bench in Guillermo Barros Schelotto, a person who I believe just as recently as today described this matchup as the eternal final versus eternal rivals. Which really kind of takes it to that next level in terms of, you know, the angst that surrounds this rivalry in general. Like I'd mentioned at the beginning, Schelotto has been rumored to have been linked with two MLS teams so far. Atlanta United, which some say he's already had contract discussions with the side. He's also recently rumored to be going to the LA Galaxy, that's a potential landing spot for him. His contract is up in December, so we're talking about just a few more weeks at Boca. And I believe, if I remember correctly, if reading correctly, the president at Boca said that we'll discuss that after the contract is up. So really, you get the feeling that he is not going to be coming back to Boca Juniors. Is that going to be a distraction to him and his coaching style, a distraction to the players? Is that going to play into this at all?
No, I don't think it'll be a distraction. I think him leaving at the end of the year has been something which has been talked about quite a lot for quite a long time. So I think it's not something which has suddenly come, you know, like some sort of announcement out of the blue to say, oh, I'm going to be leaving. So I don't think it will play any part there, really. The difference, I think, would be if, as I said, when I was talking earlier, saying the two league titles, there was always an element of it's the kind of minimum they would have expected. I think if they were to lose against River, Gallardo leaving kind of would be like, okay, thanks for everything you've done, but maybe it's time anyway. If he was to win it, then there might be a sense of, can you hang around because we've just won the Libertadores. So I think that would be the only difference, but we'll only find that out anyway afterwards when the contract's up and see what the club are doing. But I don't think there'll be any problem now in the build-up.
Okay. Now going into this final, what would a title mean to the, you know, we're going to look at this from both standpoints. What would a Copa Libertadores title mean to the fans of River Plate? And what would it mean to the fans of Boca Juniors, especially given that they cannot be in each other's stadiums? So my understanding is for the first leg, which is going to be played at La Bombonera, only Boca fans will be in the building. And then the second leg at Monumental, only River fans will be in the building. So what would this title mean to the fans of both River and Boca?
Absolutely everything. I mean, the Libertadores does anyway. So even if it wasn't, if it didn't happen to be a Super Clásico, for those fans, this match would still be absolutely everything. As I said before, Boca are looking to equal Independiente's record of 7 Libertadores titles. River are going for a second in 3 years, a second for Marcelo Gallardo, a fourth for the club. So it means everything. But when you add in the fact that you'll be beating your biggest rivals to do so, then it takes it to a whole another level. But it's the Libertadores. This is South America, and the Libertadores is everything. It means more than anything else. So it doesn't, it kind of, in a way, it doesn't need anything extra, but obviously the Superclásico has given it a hell of a lot more.
Sure. Let's make some predictions here now. And looking at this match, and Rob, I'm going to go to you first on this. We've got two legs in this matchup. Obviously the last Copa Libertadores that's going to be played over two legs, where they're turning it next year into more of a Champions League final and a destination spot. First leg this Saturday, 3 o'clock, at La Bombonera, and the return leg at the Monumental 2 weeks later on the 24th, same time, 3 p.m. Rob, what's your prediction? How will this play out, and who will win the Copa Libertadores?
I think we're going to see two contrasting sides, two sides that have had different styles throughout the entire tournament. I think River have become much more pragmatic and is more of a team that is really going to be enjoyed by the purists. I think Boca, when you look at the campaign they've been doing, they're more of a aggressive side, perhaps a much more lenient in that sense of being more, I don't want to say dirty as a bad expression, but you get what I'm saying. I think that's one of the disadvantages that they have. Obviously, the advantage that they do have is the fact that they will have their manager instead of River Plate and not having Gallardo at both the games. And for me, I think it's going to come down to, you know, a tight one. This is a Super Clásico in the end. We're not going to see those games that will end in routs. You know, this is going to be very, very close. You know, being at home for both these teams will have a huge advantage. La Bombonera, infamously known for its atmosphere during games. And what better way to motivate the team than doing it against your bitter rivals, even for River Plate in this sense, at Monumental, which perhaps isn't as vibrant as La Bombonera is known worldwide, they still have that advantage. However, I think tactically, despite the fact that River Plate perhaps won't have their manager, I think I still see this team being much more fluid in the sense that they have the team to win it. You know, you look at the likes of players like Quintero, you look at players like Prato, his name escapes me, Apiti Martinez, Palacios, those type of players. I think that advantage goes into that play. For Boca, the key players and the way that these games are going to be played is looking at the players like Barrios, you know, being that center defensive midfielder. You look at players like Cardona, you look at Benedetto being that number 9, or Avila, trying to bring in something for this team. But having said that, this is what I believe is my prediction of the two legs. I think Boca wins this first leg 2-1 at La Bombonera. And then, just for the sake of how dramatic this might be, River Plate wins it 1-0 at La Monumental, and I believe that River will edge out on penalties.
All right, Peter, same question to you. How will this two-legged title play itself out?
Yeah, I think Roberto's absolutely correct to say how tight this is going to be. I go back and forth on who I think will win. I can make arguments in both cases. I wouldn't actually be that surprised to see Saturday's game end up 0-0, if I'm honest. I mean, I think you know, everyone's going to be watching. I think it's going to be an amazing spectacle. La Bombonera is going to be more amazing than ever. So it's going to be worth watching just for that. But I wouldn't be that surprised if, you know, River would take that. So as a result, probably will look to play on the break more or less. They're certainly not going to try and leave much space in behind, so the likes of Pavon can get away. And then that might make it a bit of a stalemate. So I'm expecting a very nervy game on Saturday. And then when they go back to the Monumental, I think it'll still be very close. If you're going to push me for an outcome, then I think River might just sneak it. Certainly if they were to get that draw in La Bombonera. But as I say, I can see it going either way. And I think it's just going to be one of those that could, as we're going through the 180 minutes of the two legs, it could be swinging either way. So, you know, it's just something which I think the whole world can sit back and enjoy, even if the things on the pitch aren't that exciting. It's going to be an amazing spectacle to watch.
And I agree with both of you. I think this is going to be a very, very nervy tie over both legs. I don't think it's just going to be the first opening 20 minutes, which you would expect of any championship match that will be played cautiously, let's say. But for me, if I'm going to make predictions, I'm kind of going the way Rob went, but I want to go a little more dramatic. I mean, this is Boca River. This is Copa Libertadores. This is as big as it gets. So I'd like to take Rob's scenario, and I'd actually like to add a little extra drama to my prediction, which is hard to do that with the idea of penalties. But I do think, thinking about this question myself, I was with you, Rob, where I think in the end, even though it'll be a cagey first 20 minutes, I feel like maybe Boca edges out River 2-1 in the first leg. For some reason, I feel like that was the score that stuck in my head going into the second leg. And I think in the second leg, I was with you as well, where we have River leading 1-0. But I just to add my little twist of drama, my Copa Libertadores drama, which it's hard not to. This is dramatic enough. But I feel like that Schelotto could possibly put on somebody we talked about earlier in a Carlito Tevez for the last 10, 15 minutes to make some magic happen. And Tevez, you know, in the way he gets under people's skin and the way he seems to get in and behind lines, and he's done it time and time again over his career in a short window of 10, 15, 20 minutes where he would have an opportunity to give his all regardless of fitness, does something dramatic to either break somebody open or score himself, give a 1-1 draw and give Boca Juniors the Copa Libertadores and that title that maybe they felt like they were, you know, robbed of by the fans back in 2015. So I know you two gentlemen both kind of, you know, singled out River as the possible champions. I'm going to be the naysayer. And if I'm right and it turns out that way, this will be the greatest podcast in the history of podcasts.
Well, let me ask you this. I want to ask this to Peter as well, because I feel like this has always been interesting to me. What would that mean for Boca to win this Copa Libertadores against their bitter rivals at their home ground?
Oh, Peter, I'll let you go first.
I mean, I can't imagine what Buenos Aires is going to be like if that happens, to be honest. I mean, not having the fans in the stadium, I don't know how the River fans will react to having to watch Boca lift the Libertadores in the Monumental. I mean, it's just almost unimaginable. I don't know, in some ways, I guess, even without being there, it would be a pretty sweet moment for Boca, knowing that River would have to watch that. But it'll be absolutely incredible. I mean, the city's going to explode. Boca fans.
I would hate to be a Buenos Aires cop right now, wouldn't I, Peter?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the security operation. I saw today even the security, just because the Boca fans were at La Bombonera complaining about the fact that there's just obviously not enough tickets for the amount of socios that Boca have. So, you know, the president, Daniel Angelisi, came out and said, look, there's something like 30,000 popular tickets and we have 90,000 socios. So obviously there's not going to be people there, but that just gives you an idea of, like, if the police are having a hard time just controlling people who are not getting tickets, then the security operation for the two legs is going to be absolutely colossal.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to jump in and say I think for me the smartest thing to do would make the security operation more of a military operation and not a police operation. And to think, you know, Rob, like you had mentioned, for Boca to win this title at the Monumental in front of only River fans, I find it very, very hard to believe that there wouldn't be Boca fans at the stadium, just not inside the stadium. Do you know what I mean? And, yeah. And I think that could lend itself to being problematic for the police force in Buenos Aires. So I do hope that whatever happens and whoever wins, it is civilized. I don't think it will be completely, but because that's the fear, because we got to remember it's just a game. Although this does take on that it's more than a game type of feel. But I think, you know, to win it, you know, for Boca to win it would be, I don't want to say eternal bragging rights, but to coin, you know, Skeletto's phrase of eternal final versus eternal rivals, this would be the eternal victory for that team if it broke that way for Boca Juniors. Now, likewise, if River does win it, the celebrations will be beyond spectacle. I can imagine the River fans celebrating for days. I think either set of fans is going to celebrate for days, but I think the River fans that will be in the stadium, in the Monumental, to firsthand witness that type of victory over the bitter rivals in the last Copa Libertadores final to take place in that particular style, I think would be the stuff of legends for those River fans. So it would be certainly an absolutely amazing thing. So. So, gentlemen, I do want to thank both of you tonight. Looking forward to seeing this two-legged matchup again, like I had mentioned. First leg is this Saturday, the 10th, at 3 p.m. Eastern time at the Bombonera. And then 2 weeks later, on November 24th, the second leg at the Monumental, 3 p.m. as well. Boca Juniors, River Plate, Super Clásico, Copa Libertadores final. Peter Coates from Golazo Argentino and Mr. Roberto Rojas, I want to thank both of you gentlemen for joining me tonight. So again, this is Joe Uccello from This Week in Football, from the makers of Low Limit Football on the Beyond the Pitch Media Network. Thanks for listening and good night.